I'm Jesper and I'm joined today by Darren Hill, MD of Positive, Jack Glarner of the Wales Governance Centre and Owen Hathaway of the MUT. Obviously the big story here is that Labour have held on to 29 seats, a relatively good night for them. Would you agree, Darren?
Yeah, well I think it was beyond the expectations even of Labour's most optimistic strategists. They've managed to do that in the main because the Conservative attack on them completely and utterly failed. Plaid Cymru had a relatively good night, some good wins. They took the chunks out of Labour from one side, but in order for Labour to really come under the cosh, they had to be hit from both sides, and the Conservatives just failed.
So what do you think is next for Labour, Jack?
Well, I mean, it looks like they're going to be able to, well, obviously they're the biggest party, they'll form a government. At the moment, it looks like they might be able to just form a minority government and not seek help from another party. Certainly won't be looking at a coalition now. I mean, there was lots of talk beforehand about which party maybe they could be going into coalition with. Certainly doesn't look like it'll be going that way now. The main question really would be sort of on what sort of basis will they seek support for legislation in the Assembly?
I think that at 29 seats, you'd think that they'd be vulnerable at any given moment. They could be voted down, of course, and a motion of no confidence. But I actually think that they're probably in a stronger position to govern at 29 than they were at 30 2 days ago, because with the fragmentation of the opposition, not just in terms of we've got extra parties, but fragmentation within those parties, Artie Davis's leadership is probably going to be open to challenge, and certainly we've got a scenario where UKIP are somewhat cats fighting in a bag amongst themselves during a campaign, let alone when they're actually there, as well as traditional UKIP attendance records in parliaments have not been fantastic. I think Labour are probably in a stronger position at 29 now than they were at 30. I'd be very surprised if they were seeking coalition. I think that it'd almost be a situation, and I hate this phrase, but to coin it, there'd be a cheap date when it comes to negotiating with a number of individuals, because I think that's what they'll be working at now. Individuals, Kirsty Williams, David Hale, who knows? I don't think it'll be necessarily they'll be going to parties anymore. They won't need to, perhaps.
And Calwyn made this his campaign. He was everywhere. He was barely in Bridgend, as far as I can see, anyway. He put himself there, square and centre. How is strategy in some ways? If they'd gone down to 25, 26 seats, there would be Labour voices agitating for a change of leader today. But as it paid off, Calwyn's the hero. Frankly, if he wants to carry on through to the next election, I think he can probably try that tactic within Welsh Labour. It was a vindication of him personally.
The fact they based the entire campaign around Calwyn is our leader, Calwyn as the statesman around steel, it does mean that given they've had a good result, you're right, Dan, I think that he can pick and choose what he wants to do over the next 5 years.
I mean, one thing that was particularly notable this morning actually on Twitter was among Labour AMs who had been successfully re-elected. It was very noticeable how vocal they were of pledging their support to Caroline Jones, of saying what a fantastic leader, there's only one leader for Labour. Whereas certainly at the beginning of the night, where there was some talk about the Conservatives picking up a few constituencies, that wasn't sort of the feeling we were getting, whereas now this morning, 29 seats is definitely a personal victory for him. Yeah.
But do you think there's a risk that Labour will kind of push their problems under a rug, as it were? I think there are margins that have been eaten away at slightly. I think last night could have been very different for Labour with a few constituencies swinging either way.
Sure, and I saw that back in 2007, where actually the margins were way, way smaller in the Vale of Glamorgan and the Vale of Clwyd. There was a similarity in those particular seats, and people saying then, you know, when Labour pulled 26, look, it could have been a lot worse, there's further damage. But I'm looking at seats like those in North East Wales. I found those particularly interesting. I remember talking to Assembly members from North East Wales this time last year, and virtually every one of them was desperately worried about losing. Virtually everyone, and I'm not just talking the first line of defence here. There was a genuine belief that they could have been wiped out. In those particular seats, and they pretty much all came in relatively early, so we got a bit more chance to look at the data there. There was not just a Conservative failure, but there was a steady Labour hold there. They weren't small majorities. They saw off challenges. Labour was doing something particularly right in that part, in that corner of Wales, where there were certain parts of Wales, bits of the capital city, not all of it, but also the heads of the valleys areas. Something was going very wrong for Labour up in those upper valley areas. But North East Wales, which if you'd asked me a year ago, where did I think Labour were collectively the most vulnerable, I thought delivered massively soundly for them.
Can we talk about the Tories? Because at the beginning of last night, they were really talking up their chances. They were talking about seats in the Vale of Glam, potentially Wrexham. None of that materialised. They lost 3 seats. A really bad night for them. Do you think Andrew Arty-Davis's time is drawing to an end, Jack?
Oh, that is a tough question. I mean, undoubtedly, it was a very, very disappointing night for them. I think, like you said, they were really talking up their chances of picking off a couple of constituencies, and certainly a few weeks ago, I think most people would have said they actually had a very good chance of picking up the Vale and Cardiff North in particular, and as Darren said, a couple of seats maybe in the North East. But I mean, before we actually started recording, we were sort of just discussing this of the question of sort of who would replace Arty, and it's very hard to pick out a Conservative AM who would sort of grab that mantle and really go for it. Turbulent times for Conservatives at the UK level and Welsh level.
So do you think that the party in Wales needs to kind of rebuild, take stock of where it's at, and work out a way to move forward and really work on how to make those seats winnable next time?
Well, this hasn't been a good election for them, of course. But at the same time, it was only a year ago they made some quite stunning victories at the Westminster level. So I don't think the party is in dire straits. But obviously their campaign was completely flawed in terms of how they targeted those seats they'd previously won, how they built upon it. The factions brought out through the EU referendum haven't helped in that regard. And there certainly seems to be some conflict between Westminster and Cardiff Bay in terms of how they're managing things. So I think they'll have to have a long, hard look at how they've run this campaign. But I mean, if you look at a year ago where the party were at and where they expected it to be, I don't think they're going back to the drawing board. They just need to reevaluate how they built the success at Westminster level and try to replicate that in Wales.
I think there were two parts that culminated in what I believe is their worst assembly election result because of the momentum that's been built over time. And I think there were two parts. One was around messaging, the appearance of disagreement. Do they talk about Europe? Don't they talk about Europe? And then secondly, there was actually the mechanics of targeting. The Conservatives have been the most fantastic party of electoral mobilisation over recent years. That's why they did so well last year. In this election, they were sending out mail shots that were misaddressed. Leslie Griffiths, the Labour candidate in Wrexham, was being mail-shotted by a Conservative opponent. And that's not the ruthless, effective Conservative machine that I'm familiar with. And when I'm looking at that data coming in last night, let me share one horrific fact with you. It's probably passed virtually everybody else by. When I was looking at the regional vote that they clocked up, in South East Wales, the Conservatives had their worst ever regional vote tally under devolution. Let me explain that again. Their worst ever. It was lower than 1999. So whereas in some regions they had made some progress over time, there were certain things that they should be doing when they're the official opposition that they were singularly failing to. One saving grace for them though. In seats where they have an incumbency, that generally really worked in their favour. Carmarthen West, Preseli Pembrokeshire, Clwyd West, all of those came in spades. If they are looking for a new leader, I suggest one of the first places they start is by actually looking not to the regional list, but to their directly elected members, because they are the ones who seem to be able to deliver the votes and connect with their voters.
Talking about connecting with voters, Leanne Wood seemed to do very well in Rhondda, so she's usurped Labour's big beast, Leighton Andrews, but the party as a whole has moved into second place, but it didn't make any of their really big gains that they were going for, apart from Rhondda. Do you think that Leanne herself has won Rhondda rather than the party?
I would say so. It's not that I don't think the party has made gains. I mean, they are the only party of the Fourth Assembly who have actually improved their vote share, albeit, you know, only by a few percent. So, and I think they've had some fantastic results in terms of vote share in Ada's Islwyn and Caerphilly, Blaenau Gwent, Caerphilly. So I think there's a lot of progress being made there, a lot that they can take heart from. But as a whole, it'll be somewhat of a disappointing election, and based on the fact that the circumstances were there for Plaid to make some major breakthroughs in terms of the way that UKIP have mopped up that sort of disenfranchised vote. Leanne's personal vote, I think that when people see and recognise Leanne on telly, they see and recognise Leanne as someone who's immensely proud to come from the Rhondda. And I don't think that's necessarily a criticism of Leighton, but people naturally identify Leanne as being from the Rhondda. They see her in the Rhondda regularly. And I think it's just lent itself a natural vote. And I have to say, when you say that Karen's been out of the way of Pregend, I mean, I may be wrong, I haven't been involved in the campaign in any way. I haven't necessarily seen Leanne knocking doors, but her team has been very active there, and Leanne's been up and around Wales as well. So she took a bit of a gamble there, because had they not won the Rhondda, they would have had no story today. They did win the Rhondda. It's a very, I think, the personal victory for her today shows up her leadership, certainly for the coming few years.
I am wondering as well, because of this factor that seems to be happening in these heads of the valley seats, yeah? Places that, you know, nobody has really noticed them campaigning in, like Blaenau Gwent. Frankly, I'm sure we're all a bit gobsmacked where that came from. Don't take this the wrong way, any of you. But is it because Leanne talks like somebody from the valleys, sounds like somebody from the valleys, not just the Rhondda, that she's able to connect more broadly with a group of voters who perhaps don't feel that other leading political figures in Wales look and sound like them and empathise with them in the same way?
I think that's a really good point. And one of the reasons people wanted Leanne as leader from within the party was that she didn't sound or look or conform to the stereotypes of a traditional Plaid Cymru leader. She was elected and it didn't really bore food in the way that people seen. Perhaps it's the first sort of time we've seen the sort of Leanne breaking that stereotype, appealing to those areas where Plaid have always targeted but not necessarily had the right people to target, and that's actually shown up in some of the figures that, as you said, none of us really expected them to make those sort of vote gains.
Yeah, well, I mean, going back to your point, it maybe is it because she's more easily identifiable with people in the valleys. I think that may be the point. She's certainly more people from the valleys can certainly identify with her more than they could with the Eamon Jones, for example, someone who, a leader for Plaid Cymru who really struggled in these sorts of areas. But I think the results in Blaenau Gwent, Caerphilly, Rhondda, I think actually it might not be the case that this was a sort of a breakthrough throughout the valleys, because you look at other seats in the valleys, it didn't quite
exactly.
So I think what you look at is actually there was, in these constituencies, there were very specific local issues that Plaid Cymru really effectively campaigned on.
Right.
So Blaenau Gwent, you know, well, we had lots of things about that, but maybe the Circuit of Wales in Caerphilly, you had a very contentious local development plan. And in the Rhondda, I think it might be a case of Leanne's personal popularity and also, recently some bad coverage for Leighton Andrews in terms of some comments he's made, the infamous cheap date comment in the assembly. So I think it's sort of a combination of all of these things, really.
And I don't think it just affected the valleys either. I'm looking at some other seats where there was a strong, well-known politician, some with a national profile, who actually made a bit of a difference. So Clare Hughes Griffith, standing in up in Clwyd West, he seemed to have boosted the vote. Bethan Jenkins in Aberavon added over 1,000 votes on. Aberavon is not natural Plaid territory.
And at the time, in the steel crisis, where it should be mopped up to the Labour vote.
To the Labour vote, and that didn't seem to be happening there. So it's not just about the valleys, but it may be something to do with these strong, distinct voices that people could identify with.
Talking of strong, distinct voices, let's talk UKIP. So they've gained 7 seats last night. What I thought was interesting in the coverage was the interview with Neil Hamilton, where he said he hadn't actually spoken to Nathan Gill. So there's clearly some mutiny in the ranks. How long do you think before a coup is attempted?
48 hours.
Well, I mean, already we had Nathan Gill sort of explaining to, I think it was James Williams, how actually one of the elected UKIP AMs immediately actually won't be able to take their seat anyway, because Nathan Gill will have to stand down as an MEP currently, which would mean that someone who was on the European list for UKIP would have to take his place. But all of those people have now been elected to the Assembly. So one of them now will not be able to take their place in the Assembly and have to take his place in the European Parliament. So already there's just this sort of culture of bizarreness that's surrounding UKIP Wales.
I think that's going to be a term that we use more often than not over the next 5 years.
Yeah, but they defy pigeonholing, frankly enough. The campaign they ran, they shouldn't have got anywhere near the result that they managed to achieve. I'm pretty confident that Neil Hamilton will be leading that group. I've thought that for a while. I think if you look at the position, the people that have been elected, he's got the majority of them. He has sway on the NEC, the UK NEC, which is the ones that actually make all the big hard decisions. I think he'll be leading that group, and that will be, you know, if you think Rod Richards was discordant all those years ago, I think we're about to have it writ large. Looking at the UKIP result, though, one thing that, and I think it was, we were speculating about this a few weeks ago, about the abolishing the Assembly Party and whether that would have an impact. I think it certainly did. In North Wales and Mid Wales, they were polling over 10,000 votes.
I think, sorry to cut across, I think I did see on Twitter this morning that they actually polled on the regional votes more than the Green Party did, actually.
They did, yeah.
Including in South Wales Central, which is a big blow for the Green Party, who have really been talking up their chances and, you know, really been pushing that whole area. But yeah, abolish the Assembly Party got more votes.
And I think that the size of the abolish the Assembly Party, certainly in Mid and West Wales, denied UKIP a second list seat. Now, look, I haven't done this analysis rigorously across the country as a whole, but I was looking last night when the results were coming in and thinking, is it possible for UKIP to get two seats in every region? So I'm thinking the way I demonstrate this is by looking at the region where it's hardest for them to get to, which is South Wales West. So I clocked up, looking at the constituency vote, everything the Plaid got and everything the UKIP got. Now, when they'd been fighting over this fourth seat, they were actually virtually level pegging at 27,000 votes each. I then, once we had more data and the regional data, I found something really interesting. Plaid's vote went up to 29,000, UKIP's dropped to 23. So they had more people voting for them in constituencies in that region than they did on the list. I'm wondering if that's mirrored across Wales, and I'm wondering if that indicates a failure of strategy on their part, because maybe they should have just been focusing on the list and not even pretending the constituencies. Because people do sometimes just vote on one and not the other, but you know, UKIP were not that far away from actually getting double figure representation in the Assembly.
So this is actually a really point of personal interest for me, because I'm actually doing a PhD on strategic voting and looking at split ticket voting.
Okay,
actually.
Excellent.
So, I mean, what you say is actually right, but in that, across Wales, what you actually tend to see is that the UKIP vote, they're very good at retaining their vote from the constituency to the regional level as a whole, compared to other parties. Plaid Cymru, Plaid Cymru on the other hand, it's been a long night, are very, very good at picking up a lot of votes in the regional seats, or regional lists that they didn't at the constituency level, so this definitely benefited them. With regard of whether they should have run in the constituencies, they didn't run in constituencies, of course, in 2011. The arguments for why maybe they would vote or stand in the constituencies is just it gives them some that extra sort of awareness within the electorate, in that you see them twice, so maybe you're more likely to vote for them, or you carry your vote over, type thing. I mean, it certainly, I don't think it actually hurt them standing in the constituencies this time. The only time, you know, there was a chance in some of the Valley seats that maybe they could have even nicked one, you know, given a very, very good day for UKIP. You know, they scored very, very highly in Islay and Caerphilly again.
Well, thank you very much indeed. I'm sure we could all talk for hours about last night's results.
Thank you for listening. We'll be back very soon with more from the IWA podcast.